Hey everybody, JJ Cooper, Jeff Ponce, another Baseball America Prospect Podcast. We are back post-trade deadline edition. There's so many places talking about which teams help themselves towards a World Series this year. We'll leave that for others. We're going to focus. This is the Prospect Podcast. So we're going to look at the teams today, some of them. We're not going to get to all of them, but some of the teams today who essentially have folded on 2025 and are looking towards the future. And we want to kind of look at it and say, well, how are they shaping up? You know, are teams a year away? Are they many years away? And we're going to look at some of those. We're going to dive right into it. Great to see you, Jeff. We're just starting right off. We're going to hit it hard and go fast to these, which is the Baltimore Orioles were not a team that we expected to see in this discussion right now. The Baltimore Orioles were supposed to be challenging for a World Series title this year. It didn't happen. You know, Grayson Rodriguez, we just got the news that he's having surgery to remove bone chips. He is going to not pitch, basically, effectively not pitch. I know, I think he got on a mound, but not pitching games that count, that matter for Baltimore in 2025. Kyle Bradish is working back from injury. And, you know, we knew that coming into the season, but he's not back yet. And we are in August.
He's close, though.
He's close.
He has been making rehab starts at full season levels. I think double A on Sunday.
Got rocked, but you know, it's a rehab stat.
But he pitched.
He pitched. Trevor Rogers has emerged. You know, the trade that was truly looking awful for the Orioles doesn't look as bad now that Trevor Rogers arguably is the Orioles ace. So you can, you know, say that for that. But obviously, this is a season that has not gone the way that Baltimore planned on it going. They sold off at the deadline, Ramon Laureano, Ryan O'Hearn, some relievers. They moved Charlie Morton. They moved guys. At the same time, I don't think you could say that any of the moves that they made are like, okay, that this brought in such a haul that you say, okay, this reshapes the team for next year or anything like that. But what we're going to do with this, we're going to kind of start with all of these teams and then we'll kind of look at their situations, but we want to kind of ask the question. So I'll ask you the question, Jeff. What does this team do well as an organization?
Yeah, I think, you know, what they've done well over the years has changed a little bit. They always did a really good job of managing the bottom of the roster and kind of finding guys off the scrap heap who could potentially contribute or take steps forward. Ryan O'Hearn, a name that you just mentioned, was exactly in line with that.
Ramon Laureano was a low-cost addition this year.
Who was excellent, you know, and could be really good in San Diego. And then I think you look at the draft, and they've always done well when they picked at the top of the draft. And they had some knockout picks in rounds following early, you know, because they had bonus pool money to play with. So when they have bonus pool money to play with, they draft really well. They didn't do that for a few years. They took some risky picks, spent money on guys like Judd Fabian, guys like Vance, you know, Honeycutt, who so far have not worked out. During those periods of time, though, they got really good at identifying interesting starting pitching traits, we'll say after round five or five and on. So they have some of those guys, and we talked about it on this show months ago, that became kind of the strength of their system. They were kind of back with a big bonus pool again this year, maybe not high picks, but a bigger bonus pool. They had a good draft by all accounts. They're good at selling. They did a good job of selling this year. They had a good trade deadline. What they haven't done well, in my opinion, is take the step forward and acquire major league pieces that supplement that really strong core that you've built. I have no doubts in my mind that lineup and defensively, everything from a position player standpoint will probably be better next season. They'll rebound. The lineup will be good. I don't have questions with that. And I think that they added some interesting position players over the last few months that have made that group better. Not what it was, but better. Will they acquire major league quality starting pitching 1, 2, number 3 starters? They haven't done that. They tried to maybe a little bit with Eflin, but he had some question marks.
They did 2 years ago with Corbin Burns, and they were better.
Yeah. When Corbin Burns was there, they were better. Bradish was healthy. They were better. Grayson Rodriguez was healthy. They were better. When they had that rotation, they were better. They don't have the starting pitching depth, and they haven't been aggressive in the windows they needed to be in order to fix this problem before it caved in. That was the offseason. That was maybe even the first month and a half of the season. And they've haven't done a great job of maybe trading players when they're at their height of their value. Because I think if you talk to people now, and some of hindsight is 2020 and some of it is Monday morning quarterbacking, there are evaluators that will tell you we liked Stowers better than Kerstad and some other guys from that outfield core that were ranked ahead of him. They should have sold him a year earlier. You know, that I think a lot of the times with them, they've let stuff kind of rot in the vine because they like just having all the assets and then just seeing how things shake out and thinking that gives them depth, which I think to an extent that's true, but they didn't have the pitching and they needed to turn it into something. They haven't done that. And I just don't know if they will. It's not in their nature in terms of Elias and Sig of building a team that way. It's just not what their philosophy is. So I don't know. They've done it once with Burns. Will they do it again? Will they go and spend some free agent dollars? We thought with the new ownership group that that was going to be a big change. So far, that hasn't come to fruition.
I would say the one thing I think that does get lost, and we're all kind of doing both what they do well, what they struggle to do. We're trying to do that with each of these orgs. One of the things I would say with that is that they've gotten dinged for not spending. And what they really did is they spread money around. And maybe that was not the right approach. Now, some of that, they did bring in a Ramon Laureano with that. Low-cost addition ended up being very useful for them. Some of that was a free agent contract with Tyler O'Neill, which seemed slightly odd at the time and seems more odd now, where you're like, okay, how does Tyler O'Neill fit on this team? And again, with a team that already had a lot of outfielders, and if you said, what is the strength of this farm system, it should be outfielders because they have a lot of outfielders in their system. So that was like, okay, you know, they went out and got Charlie Morton. They got, you know, Sagana. They got pitchers, but on short-term, more back-of-the-rotation pitchers on short-term deals rather than are you better off having one or two, especially, but one even, front-of-the-rotation guy. We'll see if they kind of change that approach. I want to say, though, when you say, like, going back to what does this team do well, I feel like kind of what you were saying, they were really good at building low-cost bullpens. And that's kind of gone. Like, if you said, how did they get to, if you were asking, how did they get to 100 wins now a couple of years ago, I would say that one of the key things is that they built a bullpen with Felix Bautista and Yainer Cano and Jorge Lopez, who then they turned into Yainer Cano, you know, things like that. And most of those guys weren't big money acquisitions. They were, when they were bad, they were churning through multiple relievers a month at times. And it was like, okay, nope, that one's not any good. Okay, moving on. That one, oh, we got something here. We'll keep this guy. Okay, nope, nope, this one, moving on. That's harder to do, obviously, when you're good. This is something where now I would say that this is kind of the opportunity for them to try to do that again a little bit when they have this little stretch of time where the games don't matter as much for them. They need to kind of find, and maybe some of that is some of their starting pitchers in the minors who have really struggled. Like Chase McDermott took a big step back this year. Now you've got to decide, is Chase McDermott a starter in your future, or is there a relief role here that maybe you can get him into something? They need to figure out, I would say, like looking at what can they do the rest of this year and ideally building into next year, it's probably time to find out what Samuel Basayo and Dylan Beavers can do. Those are both guys who are at AAA, who I don't think right now we have a clear sign of what their long-term outfield is. To go back to your other point on that, like they need to figure out, is Kobe Mayo a long-term part of this plan? Like if we were talking 2 years ago, the answer on that would, I think, be obvious. And I say this, I know you've always been a Mayo believer. Like they need to give him regular at-bats against righties and lefties, I feel like, and kind of find out what they've got and basically give him a month where it's like, look, as long as you're healthy, you're playing, and also kind of figure out where he's going to fit in that. Is that, like, how do you see it?
Yeah. You know, I think that's a big question, you know, just in terms of how Mayo fits into the long-term puzzle. Mountcastle was hurt, so he was sort of untradeable for them. And, you know, this is kind of changing directions a little bit, but the things that I've heard post deadline were how low the demand was for position players, and the offers were very low, but how much higher the prices were for relief pitching and starting pitching, which the Orioles didn't obviously have to trade. So I almost wonder if some of these guys and some of the decisions they made almost backfired, that a year ago some of these guys might have had higher trade value, and now they're kind of left holding the bag and figuring out how this all sticks together. Yeah, I don't know how Mayo fits into it, and I really look at this outfield now and, you know, sort of have question marks about how it's going to look long term. Because a lot of their top prospects are not necessarily outfielders you want to start every day. You know, Enrique Bradfield's probably the best example and is a pretty big downgrade from what Cedric Mullins gave you.
I will say that that's unfortunate for them. Bradfield's been hurt. And so, like, in an ideal world, this would also be the perfect time to say, we're going to give you 2 months in center field. The defense, we hope, is going to be at the level where it's like, okay, you figure it out, the plate, and if you just get on base and steal bases, you'll be a valuable part of this team. You know, there have been some things like that. I you look ahead, like, I will say, though, to kind of wrap this up with this, with the Orioles, I can also, though, kind of lay out a pretty clear path where 2026 could absolutely, with just a couple of moves, they could be back where they were. Like, Bradish should be back and full speed. Grayson Rodriguez should be back in full speed. The rotation looks a lot better with that. And then, if Trevor Rogers can keep some semblance of what he's been doing lately up, he can slot into that rotation for next year as well.
Kratz, there are a lot of people out there that pay rent and they don't get anything for it.
Might as well change that. You can get some rewards for flights, hotels, tons of stuff.
With Bilt, you can earn flexible points that can be redeemed towards airlines, hotels, a future rent payment, your next Lyft ride, and much more. It doesn't stop there. Bilt is about making your entire neighborhood more rewarding. You can dine out at your favorite local restaurants and enjoy experiences just for Bilt members every month. They're turning a monthly expense into an opportunity to earn rewards and discover the best that your neighborhood has to offer. Your rent is finally working for you. Earn points on rent and around your neighborhood, wherever you call home, by going to joinbilt.com/foul. That's joinbilt.com/foul. Make sure to use our URL so they know we sent you. joinbilt.com/foul. Go for it.
And there's money coming off the books too. Like, you lose $18 million on Eflin, you know, final year of his deal, $13 million on Sagano, is only a single year deal. Gary Sanchez is actually on an $8.5 million deal. So, you know, there's maybe 20 or 30 million here for them to play with in terms of signing a starter. Like, if there is one available, they could go and get him. And there's still a chance that maybe in the offseason they can trade for a Sandy Alcantara or get involved in Joe Ryan talks or something if that happens. I think if they land a guy like that, that sort of changes the front end of that rotation. It looks much, much different than it does right now.
Two other things I'll say with that. One is like, you mentioned Mountcastle. Mountcastle is an interesting decision this offseason. Is like, is he a non-tender candidate? Like, he's going to be, because of just where he is in the arbitration process, he should be reasonably expensive. And you kind of, this is where the Mayo questions and the Basayo questions and things like these all kind of fit in, where it's like, are you counting on enough production there to be worth the what it's going to cost? And I would say, again, the other part of this is figuring out where Basayo fits in this the rest of the season, ideally. And Mike Elias has said that is part of the plan, that there is an expectation that he will be coming up. You know, we've talked about how you can come up later this month and retain rookie eligibility. And that is actually 100% something you would be stupid not to do, that with the PPI picks and all. You want to bring Samuel Basayo up at a point where he still qualifies to earn you something the Orioles know something about already. They've already won these where you earn a draft pick because you can win rookie of the year or down the road, finish an MVP voting or something like that. So this is a definite step back year. And it definitely kind of leads to some questions. I do think the other thing that we just kind of go back to is okay, are they going to rebuild? Are they going to regain that bullpen building magic that they've had? So we'll see. We're moving on. That's one team down. We're going to see. We're going to do two, three, or four teams, depending on how long this takes on this one. If not, we have more teams to kind of cover on this. I think if y'all like this, we might be able to do this another week as well. We're going to do our next team right after this quick break.
When your business has an opening that you needed to fill yesterday, there's an easy answer to your problem. How do you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your posts jump to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. For us, Indeed has made hiring easy time after time. We get great candidates who find us on Indeed, and we can do the entire hiring process all within Indeed. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. How fast is Indeed? In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed, and listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. Did you know your calendar age doesn't always match how old your body truly is? I just took the True Age test from True Diagnostic, and I will soon discover my biological age. Biological age is a powerful indicator of how fast you're aging internally, which directly predicts your risk for serious diseases. Here's why that matters. Research shows that if your biological age is even just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 30 to 50%. That's a big deal and it's completely avoidable. The good news is nearly 90% of biological aging is in your hands. It's driven by things like your lifestyle, your habits, and the environment you're in, which means you have a lot of control over it. This morning, I took the True Age test. It was easy. I answered a few questions on my phone, watched a video that showed me how to perform the test, pricked my finger. I didn't even feel the prick, to be honest. Provided a sample, then dropped the sample in a mailbox. It's a prepaid envelope, so I didn't even need to go to the post office. In about 2 to 3 weeks, I'll get a detailed online report about my aging and health, fast and hassle-free. If you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use our code BA2022 to get 20% off of your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use BA2022 at checkout to get 20% off your order. Your future self will thank you. And we're back. And so let's move on to another team that thought they were going to be in it this year. And they're not. The Minnesota Twins. I would say that of all the teams at the deadline that sold, no one may have sold more than the Twins did. Carlos Correa is an Astro. The bullpen. And I do mean the bullpen. I mean, Juan Duran is one of the best closers in the game. Griffin Jacks, who was the logical replacement for Duran as closer and kind of was their number two, like they were kind of their co-moment of truth relievers, traded. Brock Stewart, traded. Luis Farland, traded. Like that's four key parts of a bullpen. They also, you know, they brought in all kinds of different types of players too. James Altman, who is the epitome of the post-hype former prospect, had a really good year a couple of years ago for the Dodgers, and then it's the Dodgers. So, like, no, I'm sorry, Andy Páez is better than you. Back to AAA you go. James Altman has been freed. You could talk for a long time about the Blue Jays they brought in, and Alan Rodon and Kendry Rojas. They brought in one of the two top 100 prospects who was traded in Eduardo Tait, and another one who, as we keep saying, was just on the fringe of the top 100 in Mick Abel, also came back from the Phillies in that Duran trade.
you look at it all, and this is at least a reset, if not a full rebuild. So as before, we kind of look at what they brought, got, what their structure of all this is, let's start with this again, which is the question of what does this team do well?
Well, I think that they've honestly, after a few years of like 2020 was maybe a bit of a breaking point for them in the draft, because it's felt like their approach has been very different since. You mentioned
layout for that. Like there was a reason to be at that breaking point.
Yeah.
Keone Kavakko, Aaron Sabato, they had some first round picks that, I mean, Keone Kavakko, who's been released, never hit.
Pitching.
Yes. But he never hit like it from day one. And then Aaron Sabato, who was supposed to be, who's having a better year this year to his credit, but who was supposed to be a fast moving college bat. Bat only, like you're not getting a lot of positional value. He's drawn walks, but not hit for a whole lot of power. He's been left on, you know, unprotected in the Rule 5 draft. That one did not work either. Sorry, yeah. I interject. So continue.
Yeah. So you had, you know, some all-time kind of bad picks there, frankly. You know, even with Sabato in the back end of that first round, you look at the players that went in that 2020 draft after him. You know, it's pretty remarkable. But I think since then, they've done a really good job of identifying players sort of in the later rounds, especially when it comes to pitching. Cade Povich, who's now with the Orioles, was one of theirs. If you remember, Christian Encarnacion Strand was drafted in that 2021 draft, you know, a pretty good player as well. Brandon Birdsell, who didn't sign, but was an interesting player. They also landed David Festa, who started games for them at the big leagues and has been pretty good. Pearson Ohl also was in that draft.
If I could interject, that's what they do better than almost anybody, which is you talked about with the Orioles, the late round starting pitchers, the Twins' ability to turn late round, and I mean mid to late day two and back when there was a day three, fifth round on, and sometimes 10th round on picks into productive, valuable pitchers has been really a strength, I feel like, for them.
Yeah, the next year in 2022, they landed Zebby Matthews in the 8th round. CJ Culpepper hasn't been up yet, but has had a really, really good season. They landed him in the 13th round. Andrew Morris has been down this year, but was really up coming into the year. They landed him in the 4th round. And then I felt the last few years, they've done a really good job in terms of finding, like, toolsy is probably the wrong way to put it, but some of their parts, infielders that do have interesting tools, right? With like a Luke Kuechel and then, you know, Culpepper, both top 100 type guys, you know, that they landed. Of course, Walker Jenkins was a really, really good pick. I think that year in the draft, that 23 class was sort of like you threw a stone and you were probably hitting a pretty good player. And then Charlie, you know, Soto looked pretty good before that. So they've done well with a lot of those picks. You know, they do have some talented position guys at the top of their top 30. And this kind of will lead into what they don't do well. Those guys just haven't been healthy. And Kuechel falls into that group too. But, you know, I think of all these teams that we're going to talk about today, they have a top of the system that, if things go right for once over the next 18 months, they could have a really exciting young major league core with guys like Jenkins, Emmanuel Rodriguez, Luke Kuechel, Kalen Culpepper. You know, and they're all guys that have defensive value too, which I think is sometimes, particularly with their infielders, been kind of the question mark. They've had guys that can hit, but maybe don't have true, you know, infield defensive skills. You know, Rodriguez can play the outfield. Jenkins can play the outfield. Keisha's a pretty good infielder. Culpepper's a good infielder. You know, and then there's guys behind them like Kyle DeBarge and Merrick Houston, who just made his debut. I think it's an interesting group now. They've done a better job of targeting hitters the last couple of years, but when we go into what they don't do well, it's obviously the injuries, because Jenkins and Rodriguez just haven't seen the field a lot. Buxton, this is, you know, Royce Lewis, this is not a new problem for them.
I mean, again, injuries, there is a certain amount of luck to that, right? Like, again, but Byron Buxton being injured every year, you kind of have to account for it at this point. It's part of what you, you know, part of the Byron Buxton experience. When they signed Carlos Correa, they signed Carlos Correa in part because two other teams looked at his medicals and said, we're not comfortable with this. As you said, Emmanuel Rodriguez, I mean, we're going to hit the point where Emmanuel Rodriguez is out of options before we ever hit the point where Emmanuel Rodriguez has shown he can play 125 games in a year. Unfortunately, that's just the reality that we're, that we seem to be heading towards. Walker Jenkins, who when he's on the field has looked great, but Walker Jenkins is a guy who has really struggled with, you know, foot injuries, really ankle and things like that. And then I do think that this season kind of really, you say what, where it fell apart. It's when Pablo Lopez went down and they just, they thought they had starting pitching depth, and that starting pitching depth really didn't seem to be capable of handling being put into a hard, you know, a tougher role. I would say one other thing that they struggle to do that I think is going to be important for them in the remainder of 25, 26, and 27. I think you could say that their MLB development, especially on the hitting side of players who reach the majors, there's too many of their players, I would say, like Eddie Julian was as good, was probably better the first 2 months that he was in the big leagues than he is now. Jose Miranda was as good early on in his big league career as he ever got. You know, Trevor Larnach seems like he's kind of been at this same level. You could maybe use injuries again in his example, but like they've had a lot of guys. Royce Lewis, I know he's had injuries, but Royce Lewis has not really taken a step forward, which they kind of needed him to do. There's just a lot of these players where you say, if one guy takes a step back, it's one thing, but they need some of these guys, a couple of these guys at least, to say, okay, he was here in year one, and then he was here in year two. And it's been more like he was here in year one, and you're trying to hang on to that in year two, where sometimes it's like he's here in year, and Jose Miranda and Eddie Julian being cases of guys who's like, nope, they're back in the minors now because they're not playable anymore. That's kind of something they got to do better. I will say now, the interesting thing to me, kind of going back to what they do well, the games the rest of this season, you know, again, these are, this is an opportunity. This is time to dole out innings. The bullpen they built, Duran, I would say, is a special case, right? There are few pitchers who have that kind of stuff anywhere in baseball. And so you're not going to go out there and say, okay, we're looking around the minors. Who's our next Juan Duran? Because that's something that you're probably not going to produce. But Griffin Jacks and Luis Farland and Brock Stewart, who was kind of a scrap heap sign, those are the kind of things that being able to build those guys into valuable relievers is doable. And I do look at, you mentioned, like, who are these starting pitchers they have right now who might end up filling those roles? Because we don't have to go too far back to say with Luis Farland, this is a starter who doesn't seem like he's able to get over the hump as a starter. They move him to the pen and he's a very valuable reliever. Could that be David Festa? Could that be Marco Raya, who is on the 40 man and maybe we get to see him? Could that be Connor Prelip if he's not, you know, if they kind of at some point decide his durability is not necessarily one that's going to hold up? Could that be Charlie Soto down the road? There's a lot of these guys. You mentioned Andrew Morris. You could mention there are a number of these guys who kind of fit this criteria of, okay, if you have Lopez, if you have Ryan, if they keep him in the offseason, if you have Bailey Ober back, you hope will be healthier next year. And you also added Taj Bradley in a deal and you added McCabe. Like, okay, that right there could give you five starters or maybe even six. You throw Simeon Wood Richardson in there, or you throw Zebby in there, or you throw, you know, again, there's a lot of big league ready starting pitchers here. Some of them end up in the pen here. Are they going to be able to rebuild this bullpen on the fly? And if they do, well, I know that there's understandably fans who look at this and go, wow, why did they trade all these relievers? I would say a lot of times the shelf life of value for a reliever can be that, you know, like, if you have a chance, as you mentioned earlier, the trade deadline was one where the what you could get back for relievers was pretty good. And if that's the case, selling high on guys like Luis Farland, who did not have this value not that long ago, could be really beneficial for them. But they do need to also figure out, like, again, if they can get Keishel healthy, if they can get Walker Jenkins through the end of the season, where hopefully he's able to, him and hopefully Emmanuel Rodriguez can help them in 2026 at some point. Maybe it's not day one, but some point. Figuring out between, as you mentioned, Outman and Alan Roden and Matt Wallner, like, okay, who, what's their corner outfield going to look like? Is Trevor Larnach part of that picture? Can Brooks Lee be a shortstop, or do they need to find a shortstop going forward? Or is that something where, you know, we're looking at this and saying, okay, that's more like Kalen Culpepper, maybe, who's in double A already, so maybe he's not that far away. A lot of questions here, but they're, I would say, though, kind of to go to your point, I'm not that pessimistic for a team that just basically put out a yard, you know, a yard sale and kind of left themselves feeling like, you know, wow, we sold almost everything that we put a price tag on today, I feel like, other than Joe Ryan.
Yeah. And I feel like they've gotten the kind of returns that we haven't seen teams get in recent years. You know, and they still have Pablo Lopez. They still have Joe Ryan next year and the year after. He's got two arb years left. So they could potentially trade him if they're really leaning into this rebuild and feel as if, you know, next year is, you know, maybe a punt year. The same token, they could go into the offseason, make a couple of adjustments, sign a couple of position players that we know the value is down. And there might be position players, based on some of the things that could be coming down the road, that are willing to sign more long-term contracts to kind of lock in numbers, especially if there is a salary cap that does eventually show up. I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but if it does, you know, it might change some of the financials of these contracts and the big numbers we've seen this offseason. Maybe they can sign somebody. They also freed up a lot of money with Carlos Correa. So they have a lot of flexibility. They have a lot of talent. And I think the areas where they need to improve, they could potentially improve naturally with just a little health and performance from their position guys. Or they can go out and they can sign a couple of those guys and reinforce that lineup a little bit and maybe get some decent deals, because they do have two really good starters at the front of the rotation. And in that division, which I think from year to year remains wide open, though the Tigers are certainly building something, you got to look at it and say, we have a really good shot at getting into the dance next year. And, you know, being a competitive team, are we a championship team? Probably not. But I think for a lot of teams, it's just a matter of getting to the playoffs and then just see how things end up playing out. They're a team that I don't think would be crazy to kind of revamp it in a year.
I'll add two more things I think we need to touch on with them before we move on to our next team, which is they are for sale. And there is a lot of talk of, Rob Manfred has said he expects them to be sold in the not too distant future. They kind of, I would say at this point, kind of need that. It does feel like that is a fan base who is very much kind of frustrated. Like if you look at their attendance keeps dipping down further. And on top of that, it is something where when you also look at their TV situation, there's kind of questions with that. There's a lot here that's still kind of unresolved for them. We don't know what their payroll is going to look like. A lot of things that could kind of lead to, there's a lot of questions that, you know, that kind of may determine whether they aim for 26 or they aim for 27 is, okay, are they going to be a team that is going to be able to, you know, they took a lot of money off the books, but is their payroll going to need to go further down, or is it going to go up for next year? We don't know. Those are kind of interesting questions with them. But that leads us to our next team that we want to cover, which is a team that has unfortunately been largely in this role for many a year. Jeff, the Pirates have had that little kind of peak almost a decade ago now, but they have the best pitcher in baseball. Sorry, Terek Skubal, but I would say Paul Skeens right now fits that category. They have our number one prospect in baseball in Connor Griffin. But it does feel like, you know, having just traded away Bednar, having just made some other moves, I would say not ones that are going to, again, remake the team. But are the Pirates just around the corner, or are they still far, far away in your mind?
I mean, the pitching staff isn't a question. And it's more than just Skeens, too, as you said. I mean, Mitch Keller is under contract at decent dollars until 2028. They ended up not moving him. Obviously, you know, they have the contract and the time to sort of wait that one out. They could trade him in next deadline. They could trade him in the offseason heading into 2027, and he's still going to have multiple years left at pretty good value. They still got Brian Reynolds for a lot more years. O'Neill Cruz is still super inconsistent in the field and at the plate. They do have Connor Griffin coming behind him. I think with this organization, it's not crazy to think that Griffin debuts pretty early next year. That I think that there's a chance that he's no longer the number one prospect at the trade deadline next year because he's gotten enough at bats to graduate. I don't think that's crazy to assume, frankly. They should have Bubba Chandler in this rotation next year. Jones won't be back until later next year. They do have some decent sort of, you know, arm depth still. I think Thomas Harrington can be a number five starter and probably be fine. Then it's another, you know, a fact of maybe finding one more arm, whether it's Hunter Barco or whoever that fills out that rotation. They have a rotation. I think they can build a bullpen if they're smart. They have some interesting arms in that pen still, even after making some trades. Where does the lineup go,
though? Okay, so to just summarize, what does this team do well? Guys. Pitching.
Yes.
What this team does well is pitching. That's what they do well.
They do.
What does this team struggle to do? No one has struggled more with developing hitting. As you said, like O'Neill Cruz has become kind of the poster child of frustration with the Pirates. But O'Neill Cruz does things well. You can be frustrated by his defense in center and things like that. But he hits. He strikes out too much, but he hits. Everyone else on this team, almost without fail, position player wise, is a fringy player. I mean, we mentioned even like Brian Reynolds. Brian Reynolds is under contract. Brian Reynolds has had a terrible year. Like, you have worries that, like, okay, they are not a team that can survive Brian Reynolds being a one war player year after year. And he's going to have to work over the last couple of months to be a one war player this year. Like, that's an OBP that you just would not expect to see from Brian Reynolds. Like, when we look at it, you said, like, Connor Griffin, I think we all should mention that Florentino has been a wonderful, Edward Florentino has been a wonderful development story.
Yeah.
But how do they get to a representative lineup that could work with this pitching staff?
I don't know if there's an answer there, unless they go out and spend money or trade away from some of their strength, whether that's Keller, you know, maybe even O'Neill Cruz, if you got the right deal, you know, like they sort of need to spread it out because there's not a lot of depth. Florentino is in low A. He looks like a great story. He's probably at best 2 years away. Griffin, like I said, I think there's a chance you see Griffin next year. But then it's still a one or two man team, you know. It's just such a question as to where the production comes from. And they haven't been aggressive in that mid-tier of free agency. Like, I don't expect them to go out and sign Ryan O'Hearn to a three-year contract at decent money. You know, I don't expect them to go and sign a Tyler O'Neill. Those are the kind of deals that if you're a Pirates fan, you're almost begging them to make. Like, go and get some Major League 50s and fill the lineup with a bunch of Major League regulars. You don't need to have stars. And then you hope some of their work ethics, some of their experience, maybe that rubs off on O'Neill Cruz. Maybe Reynolds bounces back. But they need to go out there and they need to sign four or five regulars. And it can't be going and getting Rowdy Tellez and those sort of players. I think Spencer Horwitz is an interesting player. I know the organization likes him a lot. The Blue Jays like him a lot. Probably could be a decent piece for you. But you need four or five other bats. I mean, they need guys that can hit 20 home runs and hit 250, 260 with, you know, a 340 on base percentage. You just don't have that.
Tommy Pham and Andrew McCutchen, ideally, nothing. Like, look, Andrew McCutchen's been one of the great players of the 21st century. you know, this is nothing against them. Tommy Pham is the best high school hitter from his draft class, and it's not close. That said, this is their age 37 and 38 seasons. In an ideal world, they're like your sixth and seventh best position players, where you're like, they provided some additional help as veterans who kind of provide leadership and are solid professional bat hitters. They're pretty much, with O'Neill Cruz, the best that they have in that lineup. That's not what it should be. That's something where they've had, like, unfortunately, we're sitting here, I feel like they came into the year and it's like, okay, is Joey Bart the catcher, or is it Henry Davis, or is it Andy Rodriguez? And we come out of this year, or we're at least in August, and it's like, I can't tell you who's their catcher for 27, you know, 26, especially 27 beyond. Andy Rodriguez keeps getting hurt. I don't know if Henry Davis, there's been nothing so far to indicate that he's part of your long-term plans. They have a ton of second basemen, but they haven't, you know, Nick Gonzalez kind of hasn't really, he's been solid, but there's questions about his defense.
They're the kind of team that you go and you look at the potential free agents in 25, 26, and almost every position, just about, particularly in the infield, you could look at it and say there's seven or eight guys they could sign that are upgrades, right? Like Luis Arraez would be a huge upgrade for them. Yandy Diaz is a club option, but Yandy Diaz on a two-year deal would be an upgrade for them. Rhys Hoskins would be an upgrade. Josh Naylor would be an upgrade for them. You know, that's just looking at first base. You can go second base. You could go shortstop, and, you know, there's probably multiple players that are upgrades for them. You know, like, they're the kind of team that could go into free agency and, like, adding Trent Grisham and Cedric Mullins would be humongous upgrades to this lineup. And they don't even probably have to spend all that much money. It's just they have to spend some. You know, you have to at least operate as a mid-tier team if you want to open up this competitive window with Skeens. And then hopefully, you know, Griffin and some other players come around, because you're going to pick pretty high again next year. So
the other thing I would say with that, like, the to-do list for this team, you would expect that Bubba's going to come up post August 15th, you know, retain his rookie of the year eligibility for next year, but get him acclimated. I would say with some of this also, it's like, figure out which of your starters can also upgrade this bullpen. The bullpen's not been terrible. Like, the crazy part of this is when we say that pitching versus hitting, there is not, if you go by BWAR, there is literally not a position, catcher, first, second, short, third, left, center, right, DH, pinch hitters. There's zero position where the Pirates are above average. None. You got to be somewhere. You have to be, and I'm not talking your best. I'm saying you have to be 10th best somewhere, right? They're not 10th best somewhere. They're not 14th best somewhere. That's something where, as you said, like, you just got to figure out a way to improve that. And, you know, you hate to see them trade a lot of pitching away, because that's the strength of this team. But that said, like, you, at some point you have to balance this a little bit, because again, it does get old seeing Paul Skeens, you know, leave the game having, you know, after six strong innings and he's losing 1-0, and he loses 1-0 when it's all said and done, or he loses 2-1, or he gets a no decision because he didn't give up any runs, but the Pirates didn't score any, which all those things seem to happen. This does feel like a team, unfortunately, even with the best pitcher in baseball, even with Bubba Chandler and Connor Griffin being top 10 prospects, this is one that feels like it's just unlikely that 2026 is going to be a turnaround year. Am I too harsh there, or is that realistic?
I think it's all in their hands. It's probably not going to be a turnaround year. They are one of the few teams that we've seen where, if they went into free agency and signed five position players and they spent $80 million, which would never happen, the team would maybe be inside of a competitive window, because they're in one of those divisions once again where you don't know what you're going to get out of the Brewers next year. Like, They've been a fun story. They've been so good.
I'm going to assume that they're going to be good because they're always good.
The organization is so well run, but at the same time, that lineup could slide down. Like, that team could take a step back, right? Like, it's all part of operating as a smaller market team that has to live on the fringes a little bit. Even if they make great decisions and they have good pitching, a couple of injuries, something could change, and they're not going to be super aggressive in going out and getting somebody. But they're the class of the division. You have the Cubs, who Tucker walks. To me, that team looks very different if Tucker walks, right? And you have the Reds, who are just super inconsistent and haven't been able to sort of find a shape of that team in terms of how they're going to win ball games. It just seems like a division where if you're the Pirates, you have maybe potential for the best 1-2-3 punch in terms of your rotation in the division. You just need to score enough runs, and they can invest in that and figure it out. Now, they might be an 84 win team if they go out and do that, but that is a hell of a lot better from what they're going to get from this lineup and what they have coming up outside of Connor Griffin. And Florentino, as we said, is years away. So I wouldn't consider him.
The other thing I would say is this.
I expect him to be a sub 70 win team again.
The other thing I would say is this. If their payroll, you said 80 million. We both know they're not going to go. They're not going to double their payroll next year. We know that.
No.
But the Brewers and the Reds are spending 30 to 35 million more per year than they are. And there is not a whole lot of logical explanation for, like, what you just laid out, how much better this Pirates team would be if they were at 110, 115 opening day, you know, million in an opening day payroll compared to 85 would be dramatic. And that's the part where it's like, as you said, you don't have to go out and sign. They have so many positions where they have someone who's a one war player, who is a.
Yeah. You don't have to go sign Pete Alonso and Ozzie Albies. Like, you don't have to sign the top of the market.
But when you say that, though, like, Pete Alonso is an interesting one because Pete Alonso was hanging out there waiting for a contract for a lot. And maybe it was just not possible. But to say, if they had said, we're going to give you Pete, we're going to give you 1 year, $30 million, you know, and we won't give you a qualifying offer next year or something like that, that would have made a massive difference to their lineup.
I think that's what it is a couple of big bats change the way that lineup looks, you know. And it could even be somebody like, I don't know, probably a bad example now, but like a Lourdes Gurriel type of, like, you know, production, a guy that can hit 260 with 20 pumps. Like, that would make a big difference for the Pirates, you know, playing every day.
Again, maybe he had no interest, but because he just ended up, you know, but Teoscar Hernandez, you know, has been available as a free agent. And for most teams, Teoscar Hernandez comes in and he's an additional useful player for you. For the Pirates, if Teoscar Hernandez signs the Pirates, he's immediately their best position player.
Yeah, exactly.
So, well, we got the three. We got to three. We if you enjoyed this, leave a comment about another team you want us to cover. We know we really want to cover the Cleveland Guardians. We probably should cover the A's as well. So we've got a couple more of these at the minimum that we want to do. But as we always do before we wrap up, we also like to do our prospect soapboxes, which is, as we always say, we're going to talk about a prospect, but it's always got to be a prospect who's not a top 100 prospect. It's got to be someone who's a little bit more obscure than that. So, Jeff, you get the pole position this week. Who is your prospect soapbox?
So this guy's going to move up big time in the next Jays update, and that's Victor Arias. He was a player I really liked in spring training, came away impressed from the eye test, and then we got some data early in May, and the numbers popped. The EVs were significantly higher than I had anticipated. Like, you know, top 2 percentile type of 90th percentile EVs. Hits a lot of balls in the ground. He's a pretty good athlete. The swing decisions took a big step forward this year, and subsequently all of the performances jumped up. Was assigned to High A Vancouver out of camp. He hit really well there. He's now in Double A New Hampshire. He's hitting there. Opposing scouts see him as, you know, I got a Jose Siri comp on him today. He's not as big as Siri, he's a smaller guy, but from the sense of like these loud tools that sometimes come together for spurts in time and sometimes, you know, can be a little wild. I don't think the makeup is quite like Sirius, who had some off the field stuff when he was in the minors. It's not like that, but just from the sense of like, can play center field, is explosive, you know, has some power, has some speed. The field to hit is probably better than Sirius is. He's a top 10 guy. There's some people that think that he's an everyday regular in the organization and outside the organization. Didn't come up a ton in trade talks for whatever reason. And I almost feel like that was because of what this market was like. Just based on the tools, you would think that models would probably like him quite a bit. Younger, age for level stuff pops. The underlying Statcast stuff really pops. Good swing decisions that have really improved year over year. That was kind of the big knock on him a year ago. The bat to ball was there. The angles aren't great, but I think he's a good enough athlete that that might be the kind of thing that you can adjust. And just doing some post-deadline calls, that was something that a few teams really thought about with Sammy Stafura. Though the production hasn't been good, really good athlete, and they felt as if he's a guy that once they got him into their hitting development could make some adjustments and swing changes and maybe find a better swing. So I think Arias is a guy to keep an eye on, not a top 100 prospect, but a guy that's going to sit, I think, 8 in a pretty decent Blue Jays system still, even after the trades. He's a big green arrow up guy for me, kind of heading into the offseason. And I think is an interesting player. Good chance he goes to AFL. And I think with the EVs and all the stuff that he does well, the profile could really take a big step forward in the next six months.
I'm just going to say one thing about Sammy, about Stafura. I do think he's been more productive than people think. Like the FSL really does kind of high power and things like that. You look at him and it's a sub 400 slugging and you're like, okay, or right around 400 for most of the year. And you're like, okay, but in the FSL is pretty good. The problem for him is, and again, this is something where this is a Reds decision. Like they've moved their guys very slowly, especially their cold weather, their kind of non hotbed shortstops. Tyson Lewis spent the whole year in the complex, you know, ACL, the whole season so far until recently. Sammy Stafura back in the FSL after last year, they've moved these guys slowly, which I don't think has done a whole lot of favors from a prospect value standpoint. But like, you know, again, I know I'm a Stafura defender, but I do look at Stafura and say that I do think there's something here. Probably, you know, good hands. Like, I don't know if he's going to be a 6 shortstop or anything, but he's going to play in the middle infield, things like that, where I'm intrigued. So my soapbox, though, is going to go for a guy from the Giants organization who, as we, you know, we will do these where it's like we're getting in someone and we may not have a chance for doing it for much longer. Bo Davidson is really a name to watch. He's been steadily climbing up on our Giants list, but this is, again, how about this way? Among full season Giants prospects, because I know we have, you know, Josh Suarez in the DSL, Josh Gonzalez. We have Johnny Lovell, who was in the ACL all year. We have Bryce Eldridge. I'm including Bryce Eldridge here. But if you said, who's the most intriguing full season position prospect in the Giants system? You could argue, you know, like look at Bo, and again, Eldridge is a better prospect. If you look at our rankings, clearly Bryce Eldridge is a better prospect. But that said, Bo Davidson does a lot of things well. If you give the first base profile is a tough one. Bryce Eldridge is going to have to utterly mash. Bo Davidson could be a guy who provides defensive value in the outfield, center field, who can run, who can hit for power. It's really been a very eye-opening breakout season for him. If you said, who are among the breakout prospects of 2025, I think you absolutely should put Bo Davidson on the list. And he's one of the greatest stories in minors too, because we are talking, when you say, okay, was he a second round pick? No. Third? No. Fifth? No. 20th? Nope. Non-drafted free agent. And we mean an honest to goodness non-drafted free agent, not a, he signed in 2020 as part of, you know, the 5-round draft. We are talking about went undrafted, but a great scouting find out of a junior college, and has really just taken big steps forward this year. A name to absolutely keep an eye on, the Giants outfielder Bo Davidson. So, Jeff, we got through 3. Maybe we'll do this again next week and get through a couple more. But that was fun to kind of dive into some of the teams that are looking ahead to 2026 and beyond. You know, is there a team that you feel like really did kind of help set the stage for them for 26 at the deadline, you know, with their sell-off? Or do you think most of all of these are probably looking further down the road?
Oh, I think it's, if you had to give that to anybody, it's probably the Twins. And we kind of laid out why, but it's just a direction of what, you know, where the front office goes, because they could lean into being more competitive in 26 or use that as a step back year, acquire more assets and really look more to 27, 28. You know, they're kind of the interesting one because the Guardians didn't make a ton of moves and it wasn't like right now stuff. I think Cal Steven might have been the best buy of the deadline. I think the Orioles sold off some pieces. They're maybe in a better position. We talked about what their question marks are, but I don't think that's just solved internally. It will help when Bradish and some of these other guys are back next year, but they got to seek some help pitching wise outside the organization. And just looking at some of the other ones, you know, the A's, et cetera, great trade, you know, the biggest name player that we've seen moved in quite a long time in Leo DeVries. But does that make them better for 26? Probably not. You know, I think if they're good in 26, it's because their young core takes a step forward and it doesn't have anything to do with this deadline.
Well, again, we will be interesting to watch over the remainder of the 25 season and obviously into 26 and beyond. For Jeff Ponce, I'm JJ Cooper. So long, everybody.